16 years after being diagnosed with bipolar disorder, Adam Gerhardstein felt like he had a good handle on his mental health. He had a wife, a child, and his dream job. Then, once again, bipolar disorder derailed his life. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Adam realized he had to find a new way to think about his past and live with bipolar disorder. His memoir, called I Hope I Get Well, tells the story of his mental illness and how his life has changed. Joining me in this recorded interview to talk about the book are author Adam Gerhardstein and his wife, Meredith Hicks. Thank you both so much for being here.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Adam, you were a hardworking, high-achieving student at Xavier University. You had a serious girlfriend and lots of close friends. What was happening with you all those years ago that began to worry the people close to you?
Well, like you said, I was a lot. I was very engaged at school. I had a deep connection to many friends and to the campus ministry and my studies in international affairs. And then things just started getting more and more intense. I was staying out late, closing down bars with my best friends, spending money. And then Easter rolled around, and that night I stopped sleeping. I was working on a term paper for my favorite class, and I stayed up all night working on it, and the next day had a really intense conversation with my parents. And then it continued. And for the next three nights, I didn't sleep. And I started writing these bizarre letters to the university president and my girlfriend and my parents. I showed up at their house at, 5:30 in the morning and read them this letter and gave them coffee. And everybody seemed so concerned about me, but I didn't get it. I was experiencing something profound. I had these messages coming to me, and I was trying to communicate them, but it was falling on deaf ears.
And eventually there was an intervention, which you write about and in your memoir, and you write about the memory that haunts you the most. Can you read us the passage of your book about that memory?
Yes. Just to put it in context a little bit, my mom called me in the morning and said she wanted to talk. And this was on day four of me not sleeping. And I said, fine, come pick me up. And that afternoon, she showed up at my apartment with my dad and my sister and my girlfriend. And they came in and they shut the door and they told me that I needed help. And I did not want to hear it. I was fine. It wasn't me that needed help. It was everybody else around me who wasn't listening, didn't get it. The next hour or two, we spent in a very intense back and forth. The police were called. They left. I barricaded myself in my room, and then my sister had to coax me out. And then the most dramatic moment of that intervention is what I write about here in my book. My most vivid memory from the intervention, the one that haunts me most, was the sudden thud of my hand against my mother's face. I hit her hard. My entire body was twisted with rage. My voice was hoarse from yelling. My words seemed to be going into a vacuum. Everyone around me was asleep. No one was on my side, especially my parents. My muscles twitched. My laughter erupted. The air was thick with tension. No one was blinking. Everyone was crying. Thud.
And to be clear, you were very close to your mother at the time. I know you're all still very close. And you wrote that normally her word was gospel to you.
Yes, and it continues to be. She and I have an exceptionally close relationship. She can read me like no one else. And to this day, continues to be almost more perceptive about my needs and my health than I am at times. And part of it, I think, is because she's a tenacious fighter. She does not give up. And I've tested her. Even before my manic episode, I was a rebellious youth, and she stood her ground. And I owe a lot to her. And, you know, this passage in my book it's very hard to share that most intense memory. And when my mom and I have talked about it, she's always said, "Adam, it's a good thing you did that, because that allowed us to get you into the hospital, because we could say you were a danger." And every time she says that, I say, "Mom, it was not a good thing. And it will never feel that way to me. But it's part of my story. And it's something that in recent years, as I've grown, I've been able to look back on that moment and just hold my hand and just say, "Adam, it's okay. It wasn't your fault. You were very, very sick." And just try to be kind to that memory and to that person I was back then, who had no reason to know what was going on. It was just suffering.
Years later, as a law school student, you wrote about your involuntary hospitalization, and you recommended changing the standard for involuntary treatment. Can you tell us just a little bit about the change you recommended in your paper and why you felt like it was important to make that statement, to recommend that change?
Yeah, so I wrote this law review article 12 years ago during my second summer in law school, and it was the same summer I started writing my memoir. And since I wasn't doing a legal internship, I decided to write a law review article and get some course credit for it. And what I recommended in this article was linked to my memoir. It was about what should happen when somebody's experiencing their first psychotic or manic episode. What happened to me is I was hospitalized. I was involuntarily hospitalized. I did not agree to walk through the locked door of this hospital. But they got me through, and then I couldn't get out. And so for a long time, I told myself the story that, my hospitalization was a very important part of me getting better, me getting healthier. That's where my treatment began. And so at the time I wrote the law review article, I saw myself as having a success story. I had had a severe manic episode. I had been hospitalized. I had severe depression. And I came up out of that and was living a great life. I was doing well in law school. But and so I recommended that, at that time when somebody's having a first episode, rather than wait for them to become dangerous, because that's the standard in most states for involuntary hospitalization, you have to be a danger to yourself or others before you can be hospitalized against your will. Rather than wait for that dangerousness to come on, a person experiencing their first episode could be hospitalized short of that, just because there's no reason for them to have any insight into what's going on. It's caught them off guard. Their family is struggling to figure out what to do, just as happened to me and my family. But over the last 12 years, since I wrote that article, I've had to come to terms with something I didn't accept then, which was that my hospitalization was really traumatic. I was lashed down to a hospital bed for 24 hours. And by the time I got out of there and I started taking my illness seriously, a lot of that had to do with fearing going back and fearing myself and fearing all the terrible things that had happened. And so my management of my illness had to do with fear. And that's not the healthiest or most peaceful place to live with an illness. And I think part of that had to do with my hospitalization. And so I still think, like I wrote about in that article, that people experiencing their first episode need help. And that if there's ways for our community to support them and their families, that is so important. But I'm a little more complex in my feelings around hospitalization.
We're talking in this recorded interview about the book I Hope I Get Well, a memoir about bipolar disorder. I want to jump ahead to when the two of you met, Adam and Meredith. You were both working in Washington, D.C. You had this immediate connection. Adam, I guess I'm wondering, was it scary to let this new person into your life, somebody who didn't know about your past and your diagnosis?
Oh man, when I got to DC, I was ready to live again. I had been through a very hard 2 years. And in the months leading up to that move, I had really worked hard to get healthy physically, emotionally, mentally, intellectually. And I was so ready for a fresh start. And DC was a place where people didn't know the full story of what I've been through. And I had the ability to share what I wanted in the way I wanted. And I didn't have to be looking over my shoulder at Good Samaritan Hospital where I had been hospitalized or running into people who had seen me there during my manic episode. Like all my ghosts were back in Cincinnati. And so when I met Meredith, I was ready to have fun.
Meredith, what was your thought process as you learned more about Adam? Did you have any hesitation about pursuing a more serious relationship with him?
When we instantly clicked and we met, and we would just spend hours together laughing, talking about so much. And he has a spark and a joy to him, which I hope you can hear because I get to experience it often. And we just had this instant connection. And I've been trying to remember like when you told me you had bipolar disorder. And I think at the time, like I know you shared that you had it, but I couldn't contextualize like what you had been through. And I don't think you shared as deeply. And so reading your memoir, like I learned a lot more. But it didn't scare me because he's so alive and so amazing that it just was a non-issue at the time. I do remember telling my parents, like it felt when we were serious, it felt important enough to tell my parents, but it wasn't going to stop us. Once we were in love, we were not going back.
It's got to make you feel good to hear that,
Oh, yeah.
Adam.
Feels great.
Yeah. Adam, your book starts with how you were feeling in September of 2022. You had what you thought was your dream job. You were a full-time lead teacher in a Montessori school, and you asked for this meeting with your boss. Can you read that passage about that meeting?
Finally, I meet her eyes. I'm struggling, I say. On my bike ride home, I observe myself. My body is taut, my mood erratic, and my thoughts are feral. I let out a moan. It's bad. Meredith hugs me soon after I walk in the door. She must sense my dread. I tell her what I'm considering, and she hugs me again, this time longer and stronger. We talk. And then I go outside. Look up at the sky and take out my phone. I tell my boss I need the next week off, that I have bipolar disorder and I'm not feeling well. After hanging up, I stand in our backyard, my energy stolen, my mind suddenly blank, and my spirit slapped. What now?
And you write in your book that at this point, you really wondered whether you would ever be able to work full time. It had to be such a wash of emotions that was coming over you at that point.
It was. I've had a lot of different careers, but Montessori education was really the one that made me feel so alive and connected. And I had so many dreams about that career. And to face my limitations was very, very hard, which I've had to do from time to time throughout my life. Bipolar disorder often pops up and puts me in my place. And this was one of those times, and there was a lot of grief there when I faced it.
It feels like the beginning of a turning point in your story, though, really the start of a new way to view your illness and think about yourself. Is that how you see it now? Is that why you decided to start your memoir there?
Yes. There was something about facing my limitations at that moment that triggered a sort of a revolution in my thinking and feeling about having bipolar disorder. For the first time, I sort of said, Adam, let's live with it in an honest way. Let's reckon with bipolar disorder with all its done to me and all I've learned about it and take it into consideration. And so I went into therapy and I found this brilliant therapist and we dug into my past and I made sense of so many things that that needed to be embraced and relationships that needed to be mended.
Meredith, how have you viewed your role during Adam's episodes with depression and anxiety, and how have you managed your own emotions? I mean, obviously you love Adam very deeply. It can be so difficult to see someone you love going through these things.
Yeah, it's very hard. And for me, I think it's hard when I see his light dim. You know, he's such a spark and so joyful. And there's a shift in energy when he's having, when he's struggling. And so for me, I call in my supports. Adam talked about his mom. She's usually the first person that I call, and I always value her perspective and support that she gives. And in our relationship with Adam, I think part of what I can offer is perspective and a reflection on what I'm seeing in his actions or behaviors. And that allows him to really work with his team of professionals to figure out if there's adjustments that need to be made or how he might need to spend the next day or week in order to get to a better place. But it's definitely a challenge to see someone I love hurting. And I strive to take care of myself and find my outlets and my exercise so that I can be present for Adam and for our daughter and just keep our family strong during these times of uncertainty.
And one of the beautiful things I think in the book is how we've matured in the way our family handles those moments of illness. Meredith and I have become much better communicators and talking through it. I don't just hide away and distract myself anymore. I stay in the family mix and we all go through it together. And I think it's a lot less scary and a lot more just a part of our family rhythm. And I think that, you know, it's not great, but like we're living it, you know, and it's okay.
Well, and we all have our things, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You two have a daughter. You've referenced her a couple times during this conversation. And Adam, you wrote about her on the dedication page, which I'm not going to ask you to read because it makes me tear up every time I read it myself. I know I would start crying if you read it. How big a motivator is she for you, Adam, and really for you too, Meredith, when it comes to managing your health, your relationships, just everything?
My daughter is amazing. She is such a bright light. And I love her so much, and she loves me so much. And we just have such a special relationship. And part of that, I think, is because I'm always honest with her. I always tell her the truth. And I respect her decisions and her opinions and her views. And we collaborate on life. And so she knows I have bipolar disorder. And what I write about in the dedication is one of our conversations around it. And she's just so compassionate and kind. And when I'm going through something, she knows and she tries to take care of me.
Adam, you've been really clear in the conversations you and I have had leading up to this discussion. You're not a doctor. You're speaking from your own experience. What do you hope to accomplish with this memoir? Why share so much with people that is just so painful?
Oh, well, first of all, I love to write. I love writing, and I like writing emotional, honest, and important stories. And so 12 years ago when I started this project, I had this success story to tell about how you can be bipolar and still do such amazing things and meet amazing women.
One woman,
One more woman. Sorry
right?
about that. And so I set off to tell that story, but as time went on and I didn't find a book that felt good enough to share, life evolved, and then just over the last couple of years, gave me this story, this real story about bipolar disorder. It's not, it's just the way it is. I'm not trying to solve any problems or get across a particular message. When I sat down to write this final draft, I said, Adam, I want to write an honest book and I want to write a great book. And that was my motivation. And I want to get it done because I've been working on it for a long time. And now that I'm on the other side and the book is out there and I'm hearing from people, I'm just so proud that I did those things.
Well, I've been talking with author Adam Gerhardstein and his wife, Meredith Hicks, about Adam's memoir, I Hope I Get Well. You can find a link with more information about the book on our website, wbxu.org. Adam and Meredith, thank you so much for your time today.
You're
Thank you,
welcome.
Lizzie.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.